Welcome to a new episode of Get Real with Casey Kasem, the podcast that takes a deep look into the minds of creators in the fantasy football space. In this episode, I talked with Kelly Singh, someone you may know from Team Rise or Fall, Women of Fantasy Football, Extra Points with Kelly and Phoenix, Woodward Bets, TheCommishBrand.com, In Between Media, Trophy Smack, and tons more. We talked about her love of golf, writing lifestyle content, sharing personal experiences in her writing, her NFL draft experience, her job at the marketing team over at Trophy Smack, and tons more. Give Kelly a follow on Twitter at KellyNPhoenix. You can find me on Twitter at TheCaseyKasem and the podcast at GetReal_pod. This podcast is a proud member of the DAP Network. Thank you so much for tuning in and enjoy this episode with Kelly Singh. So, Kelly, we're going to take it way back. We're going to go way, way back. We're going to go back to childhood, but we're not going to get too crazy here. We're going to talk about sports to start with. So, when you were growing up, what was your relationship like with sports?
I played every sport, every sport. I was a competitive swimmer, all-state basketball, all-state volleyball, all the things. And softball my entire life through adulthood and even into my pregnancy, which was awkward. but sports, I played them and then I also watched them. I didn't get really into golf until I was much older, even though I grew up with golf. My dad owned a golf shop. He would take me to the driving range. He would take me to his shop and show me how to build clubs. But he also showed me how to play fantasy sports. He played fantasy football and fantasy baseball.
Oh, wow.
So my relationship with sports runs pretty deep. And I hate to say for a woman because it's not for a man or for a woman. It's what you grew up with. It's just
right.
Your
exactly.
For you and your household, I guess.
No, but totally. And you know, a lot of people, I mean, that's how we get our first exposure to sports is through our family. So totally. Mm-hmm. And you, so Phoenix is in your name. Are you from Phoenix originally or what's the story there?
Yes, I am a Phoenix native. I've been born and raised my whole life, but luckily I get to travel in my adult life for work. So it's kind of quenched that need to live anywhere else. So yeah, I've lived in Phoenix my whole life. It's a great city. It's a beautiful state. I highly recommend everyone come visit.
Yeah, I've been there a few times and it is really nice. So growing up, and you just brought up the fact that your dad introduced you to fantasy sports. Do you remember when you first were exposed to that, how that situation was?
Oh, yeah. I was probably 8 or 9. He played with a pad of paper and pencils. And all of the guys that were in the group would come over and almost look like a board game. Like there are all these cards and pieces and papers. And it was fascinating to me. Then when the games would be over, we would get the newspaper, open up the newspaper, check all of the box scores against, you know, whoever your team was. So it was very manual, but so fascinating to me. And it didn't really strike me as, sentimental or even like something that we did together that was special until after he passed away in 2015, when I was a grown ass adult playing my own fantasy sports. But his trophies were there at the memorial and they were just lining the stage because he would always win, it felt like. So yeah, he taught me that from 8 or 9, and I just really stuck with it. And it's what kept me interested in sports on TV. But then also, this is kind of a weird side note, I never really adopted a team as my own team because of this. I had players that I loved. So everybody be like, what's your favorite team? And I'm like, I don't know, I guess the Cardinals, I guess. I don't know. So as I've grown into adulthood, I've learned to love a team and many players at the same time. But I remember as a child, I'm like, I don't know. I like them all. Are you on mute?
Yes. See what had happened is I unplugged my headphones on accident and then I plugged them back in, but that's totally fine. You know, I said I don't edit. Well, haha, just kidding. All right. Anyway, I was listening. That is the best way to go about it, though. I think, like, to not have a team, it's weird because I've always had a team because I grew up in a household where there was a team. That was the thing. My parents didn't play fantasy football or any fantasy sports. So it was like, this is your team. And luckily, you know, I'm still a fan. So when you were that age growing up, did you have like certain players that you really, really were a fan of?
Oh my gosh. So we were really heavily into baseball when I was that age and into my teenage years. And my dad loved the Diamondbacks. Like when we got the Diamondbacks franchise, that was like the coolest thing ever. But I remember even before that, we would go to spring training every year. And my favorite players, of course, were the ones that I thought were the handsome ones.
Of course, right?
Loved me some Mike Piazza. I thought he was like the greatest thing since sliced bread. We had a little Derek Jeter up in there. And we had Ken Griffey Jr.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah, I just loved spring training. I loved baseball, and that's pretty much how I picked my favorite players. Is I was like, yep, they're pretty cute.
Well, I've been out to spring training in Arizona, so I mean it's been pretty seeing like the Rangers, you know, and surprise and everything. That was fun. So did you go to a lot of like spring training and a lot of like other, you know, sports activities during the summer months and all that fun stuff?
Well, yeah, when I wasn't training for swimming, I was swimming a lot in the summer. It gets so hot here. During spring training, it's already super hot. we did. We would go to spring training. My dad knew like all the ins and outs, especially if he had worked on their clubs, like the manager's clubs or something like that. Then we would get like behind certain little fences and have better access to the players.
That's awesome.
Kind of a perk, yeah. We definitely attended spring training. And like I said, I was a competitive swimmer, so I swam a lot. And then in the summer here in Arizona, we stay indoors, but we also had the Suns, and the 90s Suns were like the best version of the Suns.
There you go.
And I had this discussion with somebody during the playoffs where, okay, great, the Suns broke a season franchise record for wins or whatever this year. They are still not the 90s Suns. I cannot dethrone Barkley. That was my basketball nickname my dad gave me, was Baby Barkley.
Oh, yeah. I like it.
I was the shortest forward in the league. I thought I was 5'6", and I probably was, but now I'm shrunk an inch. And out there throwing bows, and nobody wanted to mess with Baby Barkley.
that's an awesome nickname, and you know it's really cool that your dad gave it to you and you have that. So yeah, Barkley. Yeah, I remember that team, and you know that time frame for basketball just in general. I was like obsessed with basketball in the mm-hmm. early mid 90s, so totally. So this fun thing called fantasy football wasn't really on anyone's radar for a while as something that you could like go into and do like anything content wise like it's just right. Crazy to even think. So prior to even setting foot in that realm, what kind of work environment were you in?
I've always worked in marketing, usually retail marketing, and I started doing like web work, copywriting, and it's kind of boring stuff like that, and selling in forums. It was before there was Twitter, there were forums. And I started blogging also at the same time. So I had two little ones. They were like 2 and 3, I think, when I started blogging. So this would have been 2008. I started blogging, and around the same time Twitter was being born. And that's what I did. I wrote about my kids, and I made a living off of being a mom blogger for years and years. And I did want to foray into sports. I wanted to do something, but it didn't seem like there were those kinds of opportunities, or maybe I just wasn't finding them, but I didn't sense that there were a lot of sports blogs. And if they were, who would read mine? Like, who would care about mine? And I don't want to make this a man-woman thing, but it is. It's hard until you can show that what you're sharing as advice actually pans out. Or I don't even talk about analytics usually. Like today they shared an article I wrote about, what is his name? I just totally forgot. Amon-Ra St. Brown. Yes, that is it. It's a tongue twister.
It is.
Detroit Lions. And it was about just his fantasy impact. And I'm not in there like laying out all of the numbers, but it was so great to get feedback and people taking screenshots and clips from my article and sharing them and just debating it. And it made me realize I can write. Like, I'm a writer. I can write. I can paint a picture with my words, and it doesn't have to have all of the numbers behind it for it to resonate with somebody or help them to make a decision on their team. And I wish I could have done that a lot sooner. But it just came about in the last couple of years for me. And, you know, the right time's now. Well, is that what they say?
That is, I mean, yeah. And if it's not what they say, that's what you say. So I know it is. It is definitely. It is. So, but I'm very intrigued by this. So how did you stumble across the crazy world of being able, you know, the fantasy football space?
So I've been playing fantasy football for, gosh, probably 15 years, maybe, probably less than that. I'll say 12 years. And it happened like office pool, right? Like, they want to start an office league. So everybody, if you want to play, give us your $5 or $10 and we're going to do this. So that's how I started playing fantasy football. And we used Yahoo. That was the platform of choice back in the day. And I still play on one of those leagues, believe it or not. But through playing, I thought, there has to be, you know, community out there. Once my kids grew and I wasn't writing as much, I had my own digital marketing agency. I spent a lot of time on my clients' work, so I wasn't doing much of my own writing anymore. And I was in marketing Twitter, and it became such a drag. It's, I mean, we could say the same thing probably about fantasy football Twitter. It becomes kind of an echo chamber. And that's kind of how marketing Twitter felt for me. And I wasn't getting anything out of it because everything they were sharing, I've already been there and done that or taught that or tried it and it didn't work. And it was just so boring seeing the same things in my Twitter feed every day. So I started cleaning it out. And this is like 13 years worth of followers, and I'm just cleaning them, and then curating. And I stumble across this little group of guys in the Commish brand, and they had me join. They let me join a listener league. They had no idea who I was. I want to play. So I think I was like token girl that year, but that's how I got to know them and meet them. And then I told them that I write and I edit, and I've been using WordPress for 15 years. And I've been with them 2 years now, and a whole bunch of other people. But that's how I stumbled into it. I just got tired of what I was seeing in my Twitter feed. So I started curating it to see the things that I wanted to see.
which is very important. I know a lot of people get frustrated with Twitter, but curating, I can't even speak. That's a hard word to say as well. And you know, muting words and doing all that fun stuff, like getting what you want to see on your timeline and in your feed is exactly what whatever social media platform you're using, like you want to make sure. And a lot of people are like, ah, it's so frustrating because there's so much crap or whatever, but it's like you said. So when you decided to start writing fantasy content, which is mm-hmm. a completely different thing than writing about being a mother, how did the opportunity present itself? I know you came across the Commish brand. How did the opportunity come about where you were able to put out articles and pieces over there?
Well, I saw them tweet out that they were looking for writers. And I was like, hey, I'm a writer. And at first they were kind of like, but do you, like, can you write analytical piece? And I said, I don't know, maybe like, I can try.
Right.
So they gave me like this test article to write. If I can't remember, it was something like if Aaron Rodgers were traded to some team, like what would the ramifications be of this trade? And I am telling you, I spent so much time researching, like researching the shit out of this piece because I wanted it to be right.
Right.
But at the same time, I'm going to be honest with you, like I didn't care about these kinds of topics and I didn't know the technical, probably all of the technical terms. And it still came out great. But I said to them, I don't want to write this. Like, this is not what I want to write. I can write lifestyle pieces. So for the first year I was writing, it was lifestyle pieces and being on podcasts and appearing on other people's podcasts and guest posts for other people's blogs. So it was just fluff pieces, I would call them. And they've been really fun to write. Like I wrote one in tandem with Hills Have Pies, Emily Kluge, and it was your team lost, now eat your feelings. So we took week one, all the losers, and threw it together quickly on like Sunday night, Monday morning, and published what you should eat if you're from this city that lost.
That's an awesome concept. Yeah.
Yeah. Stuff like that. I've done a horoscope. You're based on your drafting style based on your horoscope. That one was really fun to write. Beer pairings for different weeks. That kind of stuff. Fun, silly, fluffy pieces. That was pretty much my first year in the space.
And so for somebody who is just wanting to start in the industry, wants to start writing, what is a big thing that you wish somebody would have told you when you first started? That's a piece of advice that's like really something that's important.
You know what? Because I am a seasoned writer, maybe not in football, I already knew what I wanted to do. So I think if I was going to give some advice to somebody else is stick to what you're good at. Do what it is that you love. So if you love, you know, a certain team, write about that team, find your niche. That's definitely my best advice, because by starting out that first year and just writing lifestyle content, it came across very authentically. It came across unforced, very fun. And it was a break from like the things that we were constantly being fed, analytics and numbers. So it worked out really well for me. And then it transitioned and allowed me in that second year to start getting a little meatier, but it's still, I guess I would still say it feels lifestyle. Like it's just an article about a player or about a team or about an event. And it's still me and it's still my writing, and I'm not trying to be somebody else, because I feel like that happens a lot in our space where people think they have to be this thing. Do you know what, does that make sense?
No, it does make sense. And I think that if more people realized that you don't have to be a certain way to succeed, then it'd be like content wouldn't feel like it's constantly being shoved down, the same stuff's being constantly shoved down your throat. Yep. You get, yeah, to have a fresh take on things or have a different idea like you did, then I mean, that is important. And like, I'm the same way. Like when I was putting out content and I was trying to actually put out content that had analytics and all this stuff, like people know, And then when you go on a podcast and somebody asks you a question and you're like, hold on. It took me a while to research everything, you know, like I can do it. Like, but yeah. So having fun with it and everything, what would you say is like the most rewarding part about putting out content?
The most rewarding part for me is just knowing that somebody enjoyed it and got something from it. Like I mentioned in the article that went out today, it was so exciting to see screen caps of my work or to have people retweeting it or quote tweeting it, even not just retweeting it, because a lot of times people just retweet stuff because they like you and they want to help you. But when someone takes the time to quote you or quote their thoughts on your piece, that's really exciting for me. To get a little deeper into that, I'm still writing lifestyle pieces for in-between media, and they're not sports related. They're just like life in general. And I've gotten a lot of great feedback from those articles too. And I think, again, it's just our community is made up of people who are more than just sports fans. So when we're able to bring something to their attention that maybe they had never thought of, particularly I had written about sexual assault, assault that happened to me. And it was during the, I just lost my train of thought. It was during the Deshaun Watson issue, when that was all going down and people were very divided on it. And I thought, you know what? I just want to share what it might feel like to be a survivor of sexual assault and have your feed be filled with this nonstop from morning till night and arguments and blah, blah, blah. And I feel like once I was able to get it out, because I had never even shared this story ever. And I thought, I'm going to do it. And it was surprising to me. There was very little trollage. And I think that again goes back to curating my feed and surrounding myself with good people, and also again being authentic, and people trust you and they start to like you and enjoy you, and you're more than just an article.
True. And that's, yeah, exactly. And that's the whole stick to football thing. Like, not all of us are built that way. And you were talking about trolling and everything and the trollage of it all. I like that word, by the way. So, yeah, curating your feed is super helpful there, like you said. But I'm sure when you first started, the trolls, I mean, they're there, obviously. I haven't seen them in a while, like, because I do what you said, but how do you deal with people being hateful?
So I feel lucky that I haven't had a ton of hateful people in my feed. And I think it just goes back to being honest about who I am and what I know. So if I'm sharing something that I'm not a subject matter expert, I'll often make that the caveat. And if somebody does come after me, then it's like, cool. Well, reading is fundamental.
Yeah.
So why don't you go back and read what I said, and then we can talk about this. That usually works. I told somebody to fuck off the other day It was like somebody with 400 followers and everybody, it was about engagement farming. And I was like, this is so, why do we do this? And it oddly enough got lots of engagement. but this guy's like, P.S. nobody cares what you think. And I said,
really?
Actually, so far, 46 people care what I think. So fuck off.
I mean, sometimes you have to put people in their place, you know, and then like,
and then he liked it.
Well, you know,
okay, bye.
Bye. It's really fun when you like mute them and then they just like are arguing with nobody and then, or whatever. And then you've got people in your, and then you have to mute the whole thing because people start arguing in your, Twitter. But Twitter for the most part is awesome. And I know you've been on Twitter for a really long time.
Yeah.
I've been on Twitter for a really long time too. And I don't even know how I stumbled across the fantasy football Twitter, but like when you stumbled across it, because we all just kind of stumble into it. What were your thoughts going into this whole thing? Like there's all these people that enjoy the same stuff as me. So what were you thinking when you found this little click?
It was a click is the perfect word because I felt like I have this great big audience of people that are in marketing, and a handful of them would engage with the football content. But when I would try and engage with the football people, it was almost like ignored, like, where did you come from? Who are you? I had a woman in our space. I won't say who she was because I am friends with her now, but she was like, Do you even watch football? Do you even play fantasy football? Why are you here? And so it was a little like, I don't know. I had never felt that way about Twitter before because I'm used to getting a lot of engagement in the marketing space. So it was a little disheartening maybe at first because it was so clickish. But once I continued just the way I would grow, a client's account or grow clients' engagement, I just kept at it. I kept chiming into conversations, adding my own input or experience, and started to make friends, I guess. So the more that you engage with people in a meaningful way, not in a do you use ketchup or mustard kind of way, really engage with them, then I just felt like those relationships blossomed and I had to further curate my followers and following. And I actually weeded out like 3,000 to 5,000 followings and followers. They leave when you also do that usually.
Yeah, usually, right?
It all like grew back, I would say in like 6 months, just from writing and appearing on podcasts and being a part of other people's feeds.
I'm going to talk more about appearing on other people's podcasts and podcasting in general in a little bit, but hopefully if I can remember to go back to it, circled it, underlined. Okay. So you were talking about putting out personal content and putting out things that are kind of like, you know, I mean, they're very, you know, very personal things. Like, when did you know that you felt comfortable enough sharing that side of you?
I usually will test the waters with a tweet or a thread and see what the response is there. And if it gets a good response, and I won't say good, not even good. What does good mean? If it gets enough interest, I guess I should say, then I feel like it's worth digging deeper and sharing further. And I feel like it wasn't until this last year that I would share anything super personal with my Twitter people. And that's just, I guess, feeling comfortable getting a vibe for the people that engage with your posts on a regular basis. And like I said, I've had very few trolls, very little hate. And when I have, usually my Twitter community jumps in.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They don't let that kind of stuff happen. So I feel fortunate in that sense. And if people are struggling with trolls and it bothers them, some people do it on purpose. They like to drum up that controversy. But if it's something that bothers you and you're like, why do I have these people in my feed? You might start to consider what it is that you're sharing that's riling people up. Do you care if it riles them up? And what kind of people are you surrounding yourself with would be another thing. And that all, like I said, goes back to curating. But I feel like being genuine is the best way to have genuine conversations.
I mean, sounds simple
it
enough,
sounds
right?
Sounds so but simple.
it's hard for, you know, some people will have a hard time grasping that concept, but you know, yeah. It happens. So being a woman in this space, I mean, I was going to say, I obviously am, but I mean, mm-hmm. You guys, this is going to be audio and my voice can kind of, you know, throw you off. So let me, as a woman in this space, so we're going to talk about this because it is a big thing that gets brought up all the time whenever I go on a podcast. Like that's one of the key things to like tune in, listen to her talk about being a woman in the space. Yeah. But it is important to mm-hmm. talk about it, to get more people involved and to kind of just show that like in a boys game and a boys club that the chicks, you know, they know what they're talking about too. So coming into a space that is, you know, male dominated and being able to get your work out there and have eyes on it and everything and have ears listening. How were you feeling first going into an environment like that? Did you ever think of, you know, or was it like, I'm going to do this and it doesn't matter that I'm a woman, I'm going to do this. This is what's up.
At first I didn't think it was going to bother me because the marketing space and digital marketing in particular is very male centric and male driven. So I'm used to working with a lot of men, and I'm also used to being not listened to by a lot of men.
Yeah.
So it was very similar in that sense, except it in this space, it's not in marketing, it's education, it's projects that you've worked on, it's your experience that you've had. In the football space or probably any sporting space, it's not that. It's more like how much of a fan are you and how much do you know about this player, that player, and you can't just enjoy the sport is what I felt like when I first came in.
Yeah.
And it was like I wasn't serious enough to talk about football.
Hey, you know what, guys and gals and everybody yeah. can, you know, see, I get a little frustrated with that because it's true. When it is intimidating, it's something that you have to kind of get adjusted to. And then once you find your little, you know, the group of people that you kind of can talk to and have nice conversations with and go, do you ever see people arguing and think like, why are we doing this?
Yes, all the time. And I've stopped doing it, but I used to chime in to when I would see something and be like, can't this person like this player for this reason without you being upset about it? But it's a total waste of energy and a waste of space. And a waste of breath, I guess you'd say. I don't get into those anymore. But it was intimidating. That's a great word. When I first started putting out my pieces, I wasn't worried about my articles doing well. I knew people would enjoy them. When I would go on a podcast, and I still will do this, if I'm not super familiar with the show or the host, I'll tell them. I'll just tell you right now, I won't be able to quote you any stats off the top of my head. Yeah. If you ask me who the running back is on the Washington Commanders, I will not know that off the top of my head. Like, they're just don't try to pin me into anything specific. We can talk about favorite teams. We can talk about favorite players. We could talk about the best DFS lineup I've ever made, or, you know, like, let's talk about the fun things about the sport and what we love about the sport, and don't try to pin me down on whether or not I know stats, because I don't. And it's happened where a question like that will come up anyway. And I'll just say the same thing to the audience. Like, I don't know those things, and I don't care to know those things. It's not what I love about the sport.
I feel you on that. I've had that situation happen, like, during the draft, and I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea, and I'm going to tell you ahead of time. And then they're like, so what do you think about this draft class? I'm like, I think I listen to a lot of y'all talk about these guys, and I, you know, take notes, but I couldn't, you know, tell you one, you know, who's, don't even start with me on that. So
ironically, Casey Lee said that about the draft. That's how I got my media pass to the draft.
Oh yeah.
Was by pitching that I was going on behalf of Women of Fantasy Football in hopes of interviewing other women in media and being able to report back on being a woman in fantasy football. And that was actually my fourth application, and it should not be that hard. And it actually wasn't that hard. There was some really man assholey dude things that went on that caused my initial credentials to be revoked. But I was not giving up, and I sent another request, and I sent another request. And on the fourth request, I like knew this guy by name by now that was like feeling so sad for me. And I was like, you know that I got screwed over on the very first request. It was a complete misunderstanding, a mistake, and some guy has little dick syndrome, and he's really upset about this, that I took the lead, and I'm asking you, please, let me do this.
Please.
And then so I did, and I went. And unfortunately, it's not easy to meet other women in media. They I don't know, they're intimidating too, and they seem to not want to talk to one another.
Man.
So that was a whole nother ball of wax, but I did interview a little girl who was at the draft asking questions in the press room. It was the most precious thing I'd ever seen in my life, and so at least I got to do that.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the draft, because I totally would have just gone right over my, you know, I would have totally not brought it up. So I'm glad you brought it up, because yes, I mean, getting to see the content you were putting out and everything is so awesome. And how was it being able to like ask questions and sit there and see, you know, see players and talk to, you know, it's got to be an experience.
It was mind blowing. The first off, you could probably tell that I was a total noob, because it was myself and Detroit Beastie and a photographer that also came along from Detroit with Beastie. And we walk into this press room and we're like, are we in the right place? Because there was nobody in there. There was a bunch of chairs. There's a table with a microphone and the helmet and the backdrop. And there's these guys in the back doing mic checks. And it's literally like 15 minutes until the draft starts, and we're the only people sitting in there. And there was like two other people, and they were taking pictures. So we decided to take pictures too while it was all empty, and make ourselves look official. So that was probably how I came across super noobish, as I was sitting right in the front row, but I ended up sitting next to Pac-Man Jones, which is a whole nother story. But yeah, it was surreal. It was, I just don't know what happened. It just came out of me to shout out a question. And I ended up getting three three of my questions answered, and it was the most exciting feeling, and I can't wait to do it again. I want to do more events. I love just collecting all the little sound bites and photos, and it was a blast.
I mean, yeah, that sounds like a blast. And if you guys and gals didn't check it out, you need to go and see what she's got going on over there, because it was a really cool experience to be able to follow along with. And so speaking of speaking and talking and getting to do all that, podcasting is and being in front of the camera as well is something that more and more people are getting involved with now, and it's something that you do. Had you ever done any of that kind of stuff prior to the writing side of fantasy football?
I actually had. I used to host on my blog a sewing tutorial.
Okay.
And it was live streamed on like one of the very first live stream platforms, all like rigged together, and it was called Mom TV. And so I had done a live sewing tutorial with a chat room on Mom TV. Other than that, I've spoken at endless conferences on social media management, community management, branding, blogging, how to make money blogging. So I've been in front of an audience and all of those things before, but I will tell you that getting in front of my laptop with a microphone and with lights and with a show sheet, it was a new experience for me. And my first couple incidences, my first couple forays, they were rough. Like, you could tell that I was struggling because I didn't write this script for, you know, I didn't write this slideshow or whatever. You're just kind of going off the cuff, and you have to feel confident in what you're sharing. And I didn't always feel comfortable in what I was sharing. And the platforms can be different, and you don't know where you're looking sometimes. Like my Wednesday segment, I was a co-host today. So I did the whole show for Woodward Sports, Woodward Bets today. And you have a little square of yourself in one top left corner, and mm-hmm. it's moving at real time, and your square that you're in is slightly delayed. And then there's a person next to you, and I'm trying, do I look at them? And then I can't, my ADHD, I'm looking at my little tiny square. So now I start putting my notes over like the whole screen except the edges, so I can see if one of us is full screen or not.
Hey, what are these little life hacks you got going on over here?
So that way I'm like not super distracted, but that's probably, you know, it's that makes it hard. Different platforms make it hard. Different formats make it hard.
Yeah, it does. And then like when you have your own podcast and you invite people to come on, then you have to explain to them that we use this. And then mm-hmm. they're like, oh, well, I use, you know, Skype, and I'm not used to using StreamYard. And then, yeah, so there's a whole lot of learning for everybody. Nobody's brought that up, I don't think. And that's actually really important, is to keep that in mind. So that like, it is, there might be yeah. some hiccups at the beginning. So
there'll be hiccups, and you can ask. Don't be afraid to ask, what platform do you use? And if you're not familiar with it, just ask, is there anything I should know? Because I feel like that will make you feel a lot calmer too, just other than appearing and being like, where do I look? What am I on? Am I backstage? Like,
right. Yes. Yes. And you know, podcasting on other people's shows is a whole different experience than having your own show. So do you think that podcasting, guessing on other people's podcasts, is helpful in taking that into, podcasting on your own show?
I think so. It helps you to see all of the different kinds of formats that are out there, for one. When I have got a newer podcast now, I think I'm only 5 episodes in. It's somewhat weekly. It's more like bi-weekly, 1.5 weekly. it is only maybe 15 minutes long on the long end. And I did that purposefully because I just wanted to tell one quick thing and be done. So whether it's a major story or the last one that I'm waiting to get published for this week is how you can break into sports media or sports journalism. So tips. But yeah, that definitely helps you decide, what do I want to talk about? How long do I want it to be? Do I want a co-host? Do I want multiple guests? There's so many things that go into it. It literally took us, 3 months probably to even get this off the ground. The Commish brand is producing it. So they got the URL, they got the artwork. We had to go through a bunch of different versions of artwork and music. And it was endless having like a intro voiceover that plays in during the music every time. And I had no idea how much work can go into a podcast. And I'm so glad that I have a producer because I literally just send mine over like raw. Here you go.
I wish I had. Hey guys, if you're listening to this, I wish I had one, but for real, like it'd be, there's not enough time in the day for me to do like the whole crazy editing thing. I have all these ideas that I want to do, but I'm just like, I just don't have the time.
Yep.
Until somebody starts paying me to put this out, you know, no, I'm just kidding. You got to kind of drop that in midway through. So if the people that are still listening, you know, but
sponsor.
It's, you know, it's hard out here. So, so you're comfortable in front of the camera and you're comfortable speaking and doing all that. And I recall at the Fantasy Football Expo that you were up and engaging with everybody. And that was a cool experience as well. How was being able to talk in front of all these people that are, you know, have the same kind of focus and drive you do?
It was so much fun because we're all just fans of each other, it turns out.
Yeah, right?
A lot of people thought I was you.
Yeah.
So we did take a picture together.
Yeah.
And I have a hard time, and I did tell people with my ADHD, I do have a hard time remembering names to faces or names to screen names if they're different. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of times where people were coming up to me and they're like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad we get to finally meet in person. And I'm just like, me too.
Yeah.
And then I would put two and two together later on. Mm-hmm. But everybody was really just wonderful. And I couldn't, the guys actually were like, I can't believe how many people recognize you. And it was pretty easy that year because I wore my turquoise glasses like all the time. And it was in my profile picture. So it made it really easy. I think this year, maybe people will start looking for my gray hair because I had red hair last year, but now I've grown it all out. I only have a tiny washed out bits left.
Yeah, you know what? Girl, I feel you. I feel you. I'm like, there's a reason I wear hats all the time. But for real. But it was so awesome. Yeah. And being able to see like everybody that you, and I totally get you with the whole trying to remember everybody and names and faces and places and everything else. It's just like, I'd be like going over to like Dynasty Outhouse Russ and be like, who was that Russ? Tell me their name. And then he'd tell me and I'd be like, oh yeah, duh.
People signing their names. So after they I'm like,
that is very sneaky. That's very smart sneaky, though. You gotta stay on your toes. So I almost forgot what I was gonna say. Speaking of ADHD here, that's what I was gonna talk about. So do you think that ADHD contributes to the fact that you like writing about so many different things?
Probably, yeah, because there's a lot going on in the brain that I like to get out. I think that's why I also like my podcast. It's bite-sized. Mm-hmm. During this podcast, I've forgotten simple words like a handful of times already. And that's a huge struggle for podcasting. especially live or unedited, because things like that happen and it can be embarrassing. Mm-hmm. But I've just started owning it, and this is just how it is. And if I've taken my medicine today, but I took it at 6 a.m. and now it's 5 p.m. And even though it's like a 15-hour dose, it's just not as effective as it was at 6 a.m. And I'm winding down. So I don't know where I was going with that. That's another fun part about ADHD. Talking about a lot of different things, I think, is definitely a byproduct of my ADHD. And you can tell that in my Twitter feed too. It's very sporadic.
But I'm sure it's helpful when you get focused in and locked in on stuff. Is there anything that you specifically really enjoy writing or talking about that you like to, like, you could probably talk a whole lot more about?
Oh my gosh, I would love to talk about ADHD a lot more. Oh, I know it's not football related, but it's something that's fascinating to me that I live every single day. And even just mental health in general is really important to me. I struggle with mental health. If we're talking about sports, I love football. I love golf. I think I love golf more than anything until football season comes, and then I will love football. But even with baseball going, hockey going, basketball going, all the bets I have running, it's either golf or football that I love it. I love talking about it. I love talking about the schedule. I love trying to figure out how many wins a team might have over the season, what games I'm going to try and get to, you know, what gear I'm going to wear.
Yeah, right? Oh, so, man. That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, totally, totally. And bringing up, like, talking about mental health and everything, I'm very thankful that I've been able to talk to you, because I'm not diagnosed with ADHD, but next week I got to go in. Yay. But like, I've got questions because my therapist had brought it up, and being able to talk to you about it has been really cool, because like, you live it, you know, exactly, you know, firsthand. So it's really cool to be able to talk about that with you. So I think that's totally awesome to hear you say that's something that you're passionate about.
Yeah. Really passionate, because where you're at before you have a diagnosis, you've probably been diagnosed incorrectly prior, or in tandem with something else. ADHD with anxiety is a thing. I have that currently right now, and I don't think it has to always be a thing, which is exciting, because I didn't have anxiety prior. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, yes, I'm open book. People can come and talk to me about whatever their questions are, because when I see people struggling and they might feel like, oh, you know, I did this and it's just not working for me, and I feel like nobody's listening to me, and it's usually women, then I'm able to chime in and just be like, hey, it is worth asking about this, this, and this, because that's exactly where I was 12 years ago. So yeah, it's important to reach out, I think.
I think so too. So yeah, and I'm the same way. Like, I love being able to talk to people that are like-minded as me about the situation, and know that there are other people that are like me when I talk about like my anxiety or this, that, and the other people. Like, and that's like the whole being personal on Twitter, like, and getting a feel for what people, because like, people will engage with those kind of, they'll be like, me too, I didn't know, or whatever. And it's like crazy to meet people like that. So,
yeah, I think, well, what was really interesting when I first really started talking about my ADHD is I was making some friends, and we're exchanging numbers, and we're developing these close friendships. And I text like in flurries, or message in flurries. And if somebody doesn't know like what's going on, it can be really super annoying. And I had one person that's like, dude, like, I'm at work, you're sending me like 25 text messages. And it's a two-way street. It's one letting me know, hey, this is too much. And then the other thing is me saying, this is how I communicate. So I will do better knowing that this is frustrating for you, but at the same time, if we're going to be friends, like this, I don't know. That's just how I communicate. So I put this in a thread about, like, if you're trying to get to know me and be my friend, here are some quirks about me. And hopefully you will love them and not hate them, but because I can't really change them that much.
Well, speaking of friends, do they come to you for fantasy football advice? Are they always asking you things?
Always. Yeah. Always. I get real life friends and family members. My uncle is big into fantasy golf and he watches my show and he's always telling me, I followed what you said and now I won or whatever.
Yeah.
So friends and family, I get lots of DMs and so far the DMs are manageable for me. So I don't mind. And I'll just, if I don't have time, I'll just be like, hey, I wrote this article or I did this podcast. You can go find it.
But yeah, right.
If it's a quick question, then I don't mind. And I do make the caveat by saying that I don't consider myself an expert, but I am very observant. I like to see trends. That's part of how my brain works too, is seeing trends of things. And that helps a lot when you're talking about sports betting or fantasy football in general.
When you started playing fantasy football, was it purely redraft?
Yes. Yep. I didn't play my first dynasty league until last year. Okay. And I fucked it all up.
It's okay. I still have a team that I like fucked up so bad. And they're like, just rebuild. But I'm like, how?
Well, luckily, it's not so bad. Now, I ended up selling my draft picks.
Okay.
And also selling them to somebody else whose team was way better than mine, but they wanted to start fresh with maybe like, I think they had like three or four good core stud players and they will be for some time. So I got really lucky in that sense where now I'm like, shoot, I might even compete this year, but where I went, that whole season was lost because I had no idea what I was doing. I was plugging holes. I was making trades. I had no idea about like moving forward or back in a draft. Even I think in the leagues I played in, nobody really cared about that either. That was a big thing.
Dynasty is so different than redraft, which is awesome, which is cool. Totally fine. Totally mm-hmm. fine. And I love both of them. Is there like a specific setting or a specific rule or anything like that about any league that you think is just like either the coolest or your favorite setting?
Let me think. My favorite settings. Well, my favorite scenarios are when I'm able to stack somebody. Obviously, it feels like you're getting way more points, and you probably are. But I think tight end premium has become a favorite of mine. And also, I've never played Superflex until last year either. And I love Superflex.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
Love it. I also love it when I can put anything, not like, I can put a kicker there if I want to.
Yeah. Yeah. That is great. Yeah. It's always fun. So speaking of doing, you know, settings that are, you know, favorites or out there or whatever, Scott Fishbowl was a big thing, especially right now where everybody's getting their invites. And I say everybody, the people that don't get invites, it's cool because it's still such a great community. It's a cool thing to watch from the sidelines, been there, played in it, playing it. It's a good time all around. So are you a part of it this year?
Yes, I was a part of it last year too. I failed miserably, one, because I didn't read the rules and I didn't understand like the third round reversal thing. That really messed me up. So advice, people, go read up on the rules of any league that you join.
Yeah.
And also the platform was so difficult for me. I still don't know that I have it down. I'm going to be like struggle bus, because I'm on it also for Fantasy Cares.
The Eliminators?
Yes. So that's going to be exciting. But I did play last year. I am playing this year. I'm going to the LA Live Draft because I am on the marketing team. My job is with Trophy Smack on the marketing team. And so I will be in LA working for the week and being at the Live Draft. So it's going to be super fun.
Trophy Smack is like a very awesome company that sponsors like every podcast, has like their affiliate link. Like I have one. No, you know, if you guys want to check it out, you link in the description, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, but for real, like how is it working for a company like that and doing that as your job?
For me, it was interesting when I started because they are a true startup, from Shark Tank, and literally a founder and a co-founder, and then Mark Cuban bought into the company, and it's grown and grown and grown with a handful of people and customer service and production people and packing people, but there weren't really any marketing people. Like I came on board and I'm like, okay, cool. Well, where are our processes? Where's this? Where's that? Who approves this? And where do I find this artwork? And since I have been there, we've developed these things. I wrote a brand guide so that everybody could find the brand colors and the brand fonts, and don't put the logo here, but you can put it here. And it doesn't detract from any of the spontaneity and funness of Trophy Smack. It just makes us more organized and allows us to put out more and better content. So it's been really fun for me. I am not new to the startup world. I had actually left another startup prior to going to Trophy Smack. And it is an adventure, because for me, I don't like details. But when I'm trying to do a job, if something's not handy for me, it makes me crazy, and I will obsess over it until now there's a process and everybody knows where it is. And Matt Walsh, the founder, has been so great about it. And he's like, oh my God, I'm so glad you're here. I love having you. You're awesome. So I have super, super enjoyed it.
I bet. I mean, it just sounds like such a great company. And, you know, meeting him and meeting everybody last year at the expo, that was also a really cool experience. So totally. So we're getting towards the end of the night, or a day, if you're listening to this during the day. I don't know when you're listening, and I'm not going to judge you. But I want to just ask you a few more, like, just closer questions, if you will.
Sure.
To get everybody, you know, ready to ride off into the sunset. But before we do, if you could switch roles or switch lives with somebody for one day that is a fantasy football analyst or somebody in the space, who do you think that it would be interesting to switch with for a day?
Oh, gosh, I think I would like to switch with Adam Rank.
There you go.
Because oddly enough, we have somehow become besties. And seeing all the aspects of things that he does and the way he also includes women in the space and the things that he does is really admirable to me. And the way he treats his co-host Cynthia too, it's just really great. So he does Good Morning Football occasionally, like a stint, and Total Access, and then has his own podcast. And he's also a dad. It takes like super great care of his kids. So that's somebody that I really admire, and not just because they have a huge account, but because they are authentic and kind and generous and really contribute something to the overall community in general, and is a good person and does a lot of fun projects. That was very long-winded, but
hey,
that good person.
Hey, you had supporting evidence, so I like it. And you brought up the fact that he's a dad and you're a mom, so that
right.
that leads me to talk about that, since you yeah. that's how you got your whole start in this crazy world that you are now. So you have two daughters, is that correct?
I do, yeah. Yeah. Rachel is 17. She'll be 18 on her move-in day to Northern Arizona University. And Allison is 16 and she'll be 17 in December. And she is pursuing her GED. I'm going a non-traditional route and she wants to work. And I am supportive of that.
That's, you know what? Times are changing, and you know what? Like, my student loans right now, they're like, hey, maybe you should have gone that route. So I totally get that. Yep. Totally, totally. Okay, so being in Arizona and being there forever and ever, let's sell me on, okay, so my wife lived in Arizona for a while, U of A, blah, 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 all this stuff, right? And she worked out. And she's like, we're not moving back to the desert. I don't want to move back to the desert. Why do you think the desert is super dope, awesome? You've lived there long enough, so there should be a good reason.
I really think that the desert is super dope, awesome because of the variety of things that you can do here. We have what we call the mountains. They're not mountainous when you compare them to like the Rockies, but you can hike here. You can paddleboard in our lakes. You can kayak down our rivers. There's so much camping. I think you'd really need to be an outdoorsy person for those aspects, but they are things you can do. Then we have this amazing downtown, and it's a nightlife. There are art walks, just like every other city has, but it's mm-hmm. downtown Phoenix, and it's super cool. And we have food. What do you call them? Tours where you can go and like taste in all these little downtown restaurants. The best thing I think about living though in Phoenix is 2 hours away, where my daughter will be going to college in Flagstaff. You're going basically from zero sea level valley all the way up to, I don't even know what the altitude is, but it'll be 30 degrees here in the early morning in the winter, because the desert is cold in the morning and at night. And then there it will be like -3. So it's like
wow.
this extreme swing wow. of elevation, temperature, flora and fauna, snow versus no snow, and just a 2-hour drive.
Wow. Yeah. See, that's nice. That's nice, you know, but. I've been in Texas my whole life, and it's just kind of, So I need to change the scenery. And
that's what you get here, lots of scenery. You can go an hour and a half and be in, like, this little wine country along Oak Creek. So, and it's got its own, you know, plants and different landscape. It's great. That's the thing I love most. You go from city to suburbs to desert. I grew up in the desert. That's and crazy. Keep going and you're in like Oak Creek Canyon with lush like vines, and some trees are starting to come up, and the higher you get, then you get in the pines, and it's just amazing how things change from palm trees to pines in like the blink of an eye.
I love that. That sounds so great. See, okay, you sold me. So we'll work on it at the expo. We'll work. All right. Well, Kelly, it has been so great being able to chat with you and really find out more about you and your awesome story. You know, things I didn't know and things. Hope you guys are all enlightened. But Kelly, can you go ahead and tell everybody where they can find you and what you got going on?
Yeah, definitely. You can find me on Twitter at Kelly in Phoenix is probably the most convenient way to find me. I'm currently working on a women in fantasy football series. It's nothing new. We do it probably every year, one person or another. But I am writing this particular series for Club Fantasy and Women of Fantasy Football. I'm taking over the co-hosting of Women in Fantasy Football. Stepmom Lauren has to step back. And so Faith and I will be hosting in August that month-long charity event that will benefit Galvanize, which is from Laura Oakman, who is a female sports broadcaster, and she puts together these boot camps that teach other women how to be camera ready and do interviews. And so we've put together a scholarship fund, and we're really excited to be partnered with Galvanize. Faith is a better spokesperson on this than I am because I'm new. But look for that in August from Women of Fantasy Football. And my series will come out sometime in June. And I'll start trickling those out with Club Fantasy, Women of Fantasy Football. I'm getting ready to sign off with you and pop over to my podcast called The 19th Hole. And that is where I am the hostess, and we have Bo McBigtime and Connor Coughlin, where we talk about golf and we make a cocktail, and sometimes we get really drunk. Occasionally, it's live. You could come chat with us.
Hey, that sounds fun. Yay.
8:30 Tuesdays. Team Rise or Fall, I get paid, yay, to tell you about Golf DFS. You can find that every Tuesday. I'm really late on it today at teamriserfall.com. thecommishbrand.com. I am doing my little podcast called Extra Points with Kelly and Phoenix. It's a short little bite size. You can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Am I missing something? Woodward Sports at Woodward Bets on Twitter and on YouTube at Woodward Bets. You can find me as an occasional co-host, but you can also find me every Wednesday talking about golf around 4:30-ish Eastern time. Super fun. I know there's more, and that's a lot to take in, but just follow me at Kelly and Phoenix on Twitter, and you'll find it.
You'll get it all. So, yeah, go over there, check it all out, and make sure that you come back next week for another episode of Get Real with Casey Kasem, and stay red.